Hi, you've found the Bomb Podcast. For streaming videos, web-exclusive interviews, and more, check out bombsite.com. Today's podcast features an artist talk by Marilyn Minter, followed by a Q&A with publisher Gregory Miller, co-sponsored by DAP, Distributed Art Publishers, and The Strand Bookstore. It was recorded live at The Strand in New York City on May 25, 2010. On the occasion of the release of her expanded monograph, published by Gregory R. Miller and Company.
Well, thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it. I didn't know whether it was going to be zero or a nice full group. So what I've done to try and amuse you is to take my regular lecture that I give as a visiting artist, and I tried to condense it into maybe 20 minutes, half an hour or so. I'm going to go through this, and then if you have any questions, we're going to have a Q&A afterwards, and Greg's going to ask a couple of questions too. But think about, you know, if you want to ask anything while we're going, just throw them out. That way you'll remember. Okay, so these are pictures I took of my mother, who was a drug addict, who basically never did anything, but after she started getting high, and she was in bed all the time, and she she was once a great beauty, so she was very concerned with how she looked. She exercised, but mostly how I saw her my whole life is just in a nightgown, lying in bed or putting makeup on. When she went out at all, it was, she had to crash for days afterwards. So this is her dyeing her eyebrows. And I like to show this. I took this work back with when I was a photography major at University of Florida, and I was 19 years old. So it was probably my first body of work, even though I didn't know it at the time. And I remember taking these photos to school to show my class and the proof sheets, and they went, "Oh my God, that's your mother?" And I had waves of shame come over me. So I felt like, you know, I'm not going to show these again. And I didn't show them until back in 1995, and I'll explain why I started showing them again. But this was probably my first body of work. And in retrospect, I realized that living with my mother, who was this dysfunctional beauty, probably has informed everything I do. And it's like, I'll just go back a little bit more. It wasn't like, you know, she pulled out her hair, so she wore wigs, and it wasn't this swanning beauty, you know, that people want to go to this place. It was more likely she wore these false acrylic nails, and she didn't take care of them, so there were funguses growing underneath. So it was somehow this kind of distortion. It wasn't a clean cut kind of, you know, people look at these pictures and think it's like a movie star or something, and it really wasn't. There was nobody on set fixing the makeup, if you know what I mean. So the next body of work I'm showing you is, I'm skipping ahead quite a bit to 1989, when I made this TV commercial that my idea was to make a product, which were these paintings. And it was in 1989, there was a lot of late night TV shows. The commercials it wasn't that expensive to rent time on these 30 seconds or a minute on these late night TV shows like David Letterman, Arsenio Hall, and Nightline. And I made these paintings to sort of make the commercial, to have a product to sell. So these are the paintings, and they were all hands taking food apart. And they're all about 20, I think they were 24 by 30 inches, and it's enamel paint on metal, and this is how I was working with enamel paint from this point on. And now just take a guess with somebody, how much do you think it cost to rent 30 seconds on David Letterman in 1989? By time, by TV commercial?
2000.
Oh, that's amazing, because most people say $10 million. I shouldn't have given you the hint of it was very cheap. It was $1,800. And so it was a way to, it was really a way to, nobody knew that. And it's, you know, because you're only really buying 8 million homes, really. You're buying the tri-state area. You don't buy it across the whole country. And so we took the same money that we would use to buy ads in art magazines. And that time, even back then in 1989, a full-page ad in Art Forum was $5,000. So we had a budget, and we spent it all on Arsenio Hall, Nightline, and David Letterman. And I'm going to show you the TV commercial, which is in the book.
In which our effort in the Middle East collapses.
Let me ask you just to take a break for a second. We've got to take a quick break, and I'll come back and let you continue that thought when we continue our conversation with Henry Kissinger and James Webb in a moment.
And our mothers will be out here, and they'll fight for a while.
Two of your favorites, M&M's and peanut butter, are together at last. Introducing M&M's peanut butter chocolate candies. Pure milk chocolate, real peanut butter, your favorite chocolate candy, now with creamy peanut butter. New M&M's peanut butter chocolate candies. The best thing to happen to peanut butter since jelly.
Television. So if you didn't know what it was, you wouldn't know what it was. And it was the first time anyone had made an ad for a commercial show. Chris Burden had made a TV commercial, but it was Michelangelo, I think it was Michelangelo, Da Vinci, Matisse, Picasso, Chris Burden, or something like that. It was a 10-second one, and but this was the first time it was an advertising. And I thought, so it was always in my mind to collapse these boundaries. I like the idea of mixing high culture and low culture. And so we got this long pose on this one image, right at the very same time I was making these paintings that I call food porn. They were same material. And this was hardcore porn. And what triggered this was I saw this show at Metro Pictures of the Mike Kelly show. I don't know if you remember that, back in the late 80s. And it was Mike Kelly's this really brilliant California artist who mined concentrated on making a picture of what a 12 or 13 year old girl thinks like. He had a chest of drawers decoupaged with eyes and mouths, and then a picture of himself underneath the glass. He made stuffed animal sculpture. He made stuffed animal paintings. And my thought was, I looked at this work and I thought, my God, you know, if a female artist made this work, nobody would give her the time of day. Nobody would pay any attention to this. And I thought, well, what's the subject matter that female artists have never touched? And then I thought, well, why don't I explore hardcore pornography? Because I thought softcore is not going to work. It had to be, you know, come in the face and, you know, hitting all the at that time, all the all the different variations or fetishes that I could find. And so this was the first painting. It was done in 1989. But I was looking for things that I thought were humorous and compelling. I wasn't looking for things necessarily that were sexy. And so I called this one The Supremes. And I was trying to cover, you know, all the bases, so to speak. And I was really just asking questions. At the time, I knew, I was thinking in terms of a pro-sex feminist interrogation of this material. I was thinking in terms of, like, recapturing it from an abusive history and seeing, you know, women just didn't seem to own sexual imagery. There's still a huge a glass ceiling about sexual imagery, women owning sexual imagery. It's still huge. But there's inroads being made. And I really believe that, and I still do, that there are no politically correct fantasies. And I like the idea of women owning sexual imagery for their own purposes, for their own amusement. And so it was me asking these questions, but it was, the year was 1989 and 1990, 1991, in the middle of political correctness. And so it was and I understood the fear at the time, but it was devastating because I really thought everybody was thinking like me, and they weren't at all. I felt it was called a traitor, and I got excoriating reviews in the New York Times and the Village Voice. And it was, you know, so not anything I expected. I was pretty naive. You know, I was just making the work that I thought I had to make. It wasn't like I had any choice in the matter. And so I sort of, like, got dumped from shows, and my dealer shut the show down a week early, and I was feeling pretty beat up. So the next body of work, I still used the same imagery, but I started beating up the canvases, the paintings, because I felt beat up. So it was the same kind of imagery, but wasn't clean anymore, and I stopped using this dot screen on the paintings themselves, and I started putting acid on the surfaces of the metal and sanding it with a belt sander, and just basically beating the paintings up, and it sort of segued into imagery from popular culture and just ways I could manufacture these paintings, combining images, not taking my own pictures, and using these pinups from the 40s. And this is the beginning of, I wasn't using the dot screen anymore, and this is the beginning of me painting with enamel paint from my own photography. And this is what the first set of pictures that I, photos that I took, and I started making paintings out of the photos. And at this point, they were just pure reproductions of the photos. And I wasn't showing any photography, just paintings. So these are, this was a friend of mine's daughter, and I just put lipstick on her. She was 11 years old. And I immediately started working with enamel paint, same way as I always was painting. But I guess back here, I started back in the early 90s, I started softening the edges with my fingers, with these two fingers, and making these layered imagery, So it created this illusion of richness and denseness that I never saw in oil painting or in acrylic. And it was very luscious, and it made me very happy. And it was like one of those serendipitous moments. I didn't even know why I started softening the edges with my fingers. And this is the work I'm doing today. This was just the first ones. And at the same time, I started seeing some of the photos were really nice. I liked them a lot. So I didn't want to make paintings of them because I thought they were sort of perfect and I wouldn't do anything to them. And usually in the painting, I'd always, like, altered it, changed it, made it richer somehow than the photography. But it didn't make sense to me to paint this. It was a perfect photo in my mind. And so I started showing the paintings and the photographs in the same room. So this would be a painting, and that would be a photo. And for me, they were really very different. And I only see the different. It's hard to see them in reproduction, but for me, they were extremely different. These are all paintings. That same era of jewelry in the mouth, almost to the point of, you know, choking. And so these are some of the photos. It's called Vampire, which is not popular right now. And at the very same time I was doing these glamorous imagery, I was always taking parts of the body that I still was always interested in, the parts of the body that exist but nobody pays attention to. So this is an armpit with, I had my model, she was one of my students, I asked her to just grow out the hair under her arms. And just taking your socks down, there's always lines. So I'm very, very interested in like things that we all have but we just don't pay any attention to. And I started shooting, and now this is I thought I'd just show you some, if you get close to my paintings, this is how they start out with blocked in, you can really sort of see the fingerprints still, and that's a real close-up, and that's all on this painting. And I'm going to show you a zoom in a minute, the same, this is a pretty big painting, and this was the beginning of my career really was, there's a gentleman here that gave me my first show, and I didn't even have a gallery in New York City. Josh Shirky gave me my first show at the SF MoMA. So I had a one-person show at SF MoMA, and I didn't even have a gallery in New York City. So it was like the beginning of this new career I had. I forgot to tell you this, as I'm condensing this, I'm trying to go really fast. I got let back into the art world when I started showing the photos of my mother. So I that was like sort of interesting in a way. We've never really talked about it, but it tells you something about, you know, people, including myself, I guess, there's a kind of legitimacy, or, you know, we all want our artists to come from some kind of dysfunction before they get believed in. So it was like the beginning of everybody just re-examining my work. So I owe Josh a big debt. And so these are the paintings from that era. This was one of the bigger ones, the 10-foot. And I'm getting bigger and bigger, and the paintings are taking forever, so I'm hiring people to help me paint at this point. And this is a photo. And these next few images are images of photography that I'd shot in my studio, actually. And we ended up making billboards at the same time I was in the Whitney Biennial. And Creative Time did these billboards. But I didn't realize when I put these all together that I just grouped all the feet together, and the billboards aren't here yet. So sorry, but this is new to me too, condensing this. So here's a billboard that was in Chelsea. These were all in Chelsea. And they were up for about a month through Creative Time at the same time I was in the Whitney Biennial. They were all over Chelsea. And now this is the next body of work. I started looking, getting these close-ups of eyes. Actually, they were, these are the paintings when I started doing most everything in Photoshop. Like, this is no longer one image. This is an image sandwich. I started Photoshopping the negatives, because I still work analog, I still do, but I scan the negatives and combine different elements to make paintings now. And so now, pretty much all of the paintings you're going to see from now on don't exist as a photo. They're all made in the last, like it takes about a day to Photoshop a whole painting now, and they're all pretty big. So this is a photo. See, what I did is I'm telling you this, but it doesn't jive with the images yet. These are all the eye pictures. I put them all, I grouped them all, I ganged them together as Richard Prince would do. And then I started going more and more abstract with some of them. Okay, now, do you know who that is? Yeah, she asked me to shoot a picture of her. She was marrying Kid Rock. I was just working in my studio upstate, and they called me. And David LaChapelle is her best friend, and he said he wanted to take a picture. He wanted to commission me to make a painting. But the marriage fell apart, so it didn't last very long. So, but I was always intrigued. I always knew how beautiful she was, you know, underneath all the glamorous makeup and the hair and the eyes, and because I knew she was an animal rights activist, and I always thought, well, she's got to be really empathetic, And, you know, anybody who can't tolerate any pain to animals, I wanted to show that person. So basically, she allowed me to take the makeup off, even though it wasn't for a portrait anymore. It was for Parquet magazine, which was this, it's a Swiss art magazine, and I thought it would be great to put Pam in as the centerfold. And she was totally up for it. She worked with artists. She's a very savvy young lady. And when you saw Borat, you know, she's worked with Jeff Koons and Richard Prince, and that, and she was willing to take all her makeup off and work with me. She was really pretty cool. And so this is one of the paintings we made up. The last things I was showing you were the photos, but this is one of the first paintings we made of Pam. And this is called Barbed Wire. And this is another one. All totally photoshopped. All these splashes, everything. I just went to California and shot her on a weekend. She was very much a really good sport, because my shoots are not that pleasant, because people get very, you know, wet and greasy. So this is the last Pam. I just finished this, the last Pam painting. And so now I think all of these are the eyes. We're getting up to the end pretty soon. And I, you know, I've always been interested in, and you know, this is, I basically made this because it's as a pimple. And I've very been interested in people with freckles, because they're not represented in the culture at all. They're always photoshopped out or lasered out. And I thought, you know, you could take any image and have the model doing anything, but if she's covered in freckles, it's going to look different. And it'll get your attention, or at least it gets mine. This is a model who's pretty well known, but no one ever shows her freckles. So I shot her and this guy that I found that were just covered in freckles. And I just, you know, went into it big time with skin. And I was really interested in creating this imagery of freckles. This was in my last show. And that's this guy, Tim Nye, who has his daughter tattooed on his shoulder, and he was sweating, and so it looked like she was crying, so I made a painting of it. So this is I didn't really change that much. And then this one is totally, this is both freckles and bubbles. These are pretty big paintings. These are all about 10 feet at this point. And now this is a one fingerprint. I'm gonna try and keep this thing on here, and there's a zoom here. That last painting, it just takes a minute. So I'm trying to keep it on the fingerprint. So you get a sense of what I'm doing when I'm painting. It's really pretty abstract. And so these are the bubbles and freckles combinations. Am I going too fast? Some of them are more focused and out of focus. And then this was last year. I was shooting these models licking candy. I actually shot this whole thing during a commercial shoot for MAC. And whenever I was doing eye makeup for MAC, and whenever the model took a break, I said, could you come and lick this? This is meringue and blue food coloring. So and lick this. And so I was taking stills, and then the videographer came in and shot right behind me and shot video. And so then we edited it. And this is like dry. This is without the saliva mix. And, you know, sort of disgusting when you think about it. So I tried to make it as gloriously sensual that you sort of forget. So these are the paintings I made from this, and these are totally photoshopped images. Lots of different negatives. This was about 10 different negatives to make this painting. And this is a 15-by-9-foot painting. And this is also 15-by-9. This was in my show in California just recently, like 6 months ago. And this is the video that we ended up with. And this is a short 1-minute version that's on YouTube, because the whole video is 8 minutes long. You can can see it at the lobby of the Modern right now. Creative Time put it in a on the MTV Billboard in Times Square, but this one you just saw, we actually had it as a preview at Sunshine. So if you went to movies in April last year, this was between movies at the Sunshine Theater. So that was the 1 minute version, and like I said, the 8 minute version is at the Modern in the lobby right now. So. And then I just thought, this is the sweet part of this. It was such a serendipitous, you know, video. We made it strictly just shooting between takes in the Mac ad, and then Mac paid for all of the, you know, everything. They were really very gracious about it. They didn't know we were doing it, but once they found out, they didn't get mad. They were really nice. And so then somebody sent the video to Madonna, and she was, I got a phone call saying, how much would you charge, you know, if Madonna wanted to use this in her tours, Sticky and Sweet? And I said, well, how much does Madonna want me to pay her? And so anyway, she bought it. Well, it took a while because I guess she sat on it for a while and was playing with it, and you know, she really designs this every second of the tour. But the next thing I know, I got, oh yeah, one morning I got this big thing of flowers, and delivered to my house, and I was joking with my assistant. I said, oh, these are from Madonna, and they were. And then I got tickets, and we went to. London to see the premiere, because she changed the tour and she put this as the backdrop for the first song's Candy Shop, and she paid me. So here's a quick off of YouTube. This is just a quick. So that's, we just cut that out to show you all. And that was, you know, a nice way. This had its own life, this video, and it was really, really fun. Same thing sort of happened with this next body of work. This is the artist Spangeshi Mutu, and she wanted me to document her pregnancy. We've been friends for a while, and she was pregnant, and I was, you know, we learned this when we were shooting to... if we mix vodka with this food coloring, we could get this gold sort of paint that's not, you know, it wouldn't kill you. And but she's pregnant, so she had to keep spitting it out. But she was really game, and we played around with it. And I should show you, these are the photos I took of her. I also documented her pregnancy, and she took the documentation of her pregnant and made collages out of it. So this was the last body of work. I'm still sort of, these are giant paintings, totally made up, totally different from the photos themselves. And I think this is, we're coming towards the next thing nobody's seen yet, so you're gonna be the first. This new body of work I'm doing is, I've been playing with that material, the silver mixed with vodka, and this is wallpaper that Maharam is doing. And these are some of the stills from it. And then I'm shooting these right now. I just finished shooting these. These are the new photographs I'm doing. And these are going to be the new paintings. And these are going to be 15, 10 feet. And I'm just shooting, you know, I'm using the glass still. But shooting, you know, both focusing. I'm trying to create the depth, a kind of depth with this glass. But this is really about 70 different layers. This is like all day long to make these now. But we're starting to paint. This is 15 by 9. And that's it.
Well, fantastic job, Marilyn, as always. I'm Greg Miller, and first I just want to say thanks to The Strand for hosting us this evening and for making the celebration of art books generally and tonight Marilyn's book possible. I'm going to turn this over to questions from all of you in just a few minutes, but I thought you might be interested to hear a few words about how this book first came about. Then I'll ask Marilyn a couple questions, and then as I said, the floor is open, and as you might suspect from some of Marilyn's images, no holds barred with your questions. Ask whatever whatever you'd like. I started this art book publishing company about 7-8 years ago, and not long after I started it, I was interested in doing a monograph on Marilyn's work because she had no book, no book really of any sort, let alone a retrospective monograph. And Marilyn's work I had known for, you know, a good 15 plus years. We in fact met about a dozen years ago when we were both together and still are on the board of White Collins, a great arts organization here in the city. And Marilyn and I first talked about this as we were sitting together at the same table for an opening of a Mary Heilman show. And Mary Heilman is a good friend of Marilyn's, and in the book is, you know, a wonderful and very, very revealing conversation about both of those artists.
Here tonight.
between the two. And Marilyn said, "That sounds fantastic. Let's do a book." And we did indeed work for a couple years to put the book together. The first edition came out in 2007. And as Christina indicated, it didn't take long for that book to sell out, partly because it coincided with you know, a rather meteoric rise in the attention that Marilyn, and importantly Marilyn's work, was getting, both in the year leading up to the publication of the book and in the years afterwards. That book is now sold out, and it's not often that art book publishers decide to do a second edition like the one we've done, which is not simply a reprint. We decided to do, you know, what we're referring to as a new and expanded edition, because it really is an expanded edition. And as you've seen in some of these images, we thought, I certainly think, that the work that Marilyn has done over the last 3 years, in other words, over the course of time since the first book, you know, really continues to just propel her career forward, as well as continues her tradition of breakthroughs in her own practice, as well as in ways we think about what contemporary art is, what a painting is, what sort of things can paintings be about. So that's why you've got this book here with a huge set of new images that really bring Marilyn's story once again up to date and helps us tell it more completely. But there are a few artists as active as Marilyn, so I'm expecting we'll have reasons to do expanded books in the not-so-distant future. So with that, Marilyn, I would like to ask you, now that you've gone through the process of making two books and, you know, the choices that go into the design as well as the selection of images in those books, you know, what have you learned about your career or your work or your practice through having worked on and made these books?
Well, when you have no books, and then you have choices of two books, and then to try and find the very best, you know, images, it was really just a pleasure, because I got to, well, I got to work off of what's going well in my life, so I had an embarrassment of riches, like, to choose from, instead of, you know, just trying to get a bunch of images together, you know, to make a book, we had, in the last few years when I've had such a great support system and great dealers and a great publisher, you know, I've been making my best work. So, you know, it's not that people, you know, I really think it's not that unusual because, you know, you want an artist's career is not necessarily just this really short period of time. And female artists especially seem to blossom after a certain age. I don't know why, but I've had this, you know, a million more ideas and I'm growing from support and I'm able to do the things that I'm able to concretize these ideas that have been floating around like images just in my head. Does that answer?
Indeed, yeah, and in the book, as some of you may know, there are 20 questions, which is a project that Matthew Higgs, who's actually the director of White Collins, put together for Marilyn, and it's a range of questions from 20 of Marilyn's friends and various art world and other cultural folks who know or know of Marilyn. And while they're very revealing questions, 20 questions is only a few, and if there was a question you were hoping to be asked in that project, Marilyn, what might it have been that wasn't asked?
There wasn't any. I was, you know, there were some questions that weren't that pleasant to answer.
What question surprised you then?
I think it was Jerry, something about sexuality. Well, probably, and then Jack Pearson said, "Do you love your mother?" This is such a brilliant way to, you know, to have, it's not an academic writing. It's like, you know, they would never ask those questions. That information wouldn't be in anybody's book. Matthew created this 20 questions that are so personal. Most people would be able to ask those kinds of questions that are working in terms of academia, don't you think? It's pretty,
right,
yeah, pretty
that.
Revealing. Do you love your mother? You know, that's such a loaded question. Jerry's, did you get off on visual porn? What's your favorite type of porn and why? What artists use porn in ways that are interesting and why? What artists use porn in ways that are not interesting and why? Great, Jerry.
You have to buy the book to get the answer. Great. Well, speaking of books, Marilyn is a great reader herself. What books, art books or otherwise, have you read recently, Marilyn, that
you've
liked?
I read the most delicious book. It's just the best book. I recommend it. It's called Pop by Tony Shearman and somebody Dalton. And it's about Andy Warhol. And it's just a read you cannot put down. It's so insightful. Such a pleasure. I recommend it, but I'm always reading. I'm voracious, like you.
Great. Well, with that, I'll turn it over to questions from the crowd. And Christina, who introduced the event this evening, does have a microphone that she'll bring around to people who do have questions. And, you know, we'll do this for the next 15 minutes or so.
Well, there aren't any, huh?
I have a question. Have you ever painted, have you ever made a painting based on a random photograph of yours, or all of your work, all of your painting based on the images that you've staged in the studio?
Well, that's interesting. A random, it's like when I'm shooting, I'm sometimes surprised when I get the next back, because I get in the zone. So all of a sudden I went, whoa, I don't remember taking that. So in a way, that's a random image. Well, this is a short question answer. there's one.
Hi. I was in your class at SVA back in 89.
You look familiar.
And that was back when Soho still existed, so when we'd go out for lunch, you'd say, oh, go down and see the show, and then come back and we'll talk about it, which was great. And then one thing that you used to always say to us was, if you could take the $20 to buy the catalog, do it, and we did. So I have a huge collection now, so I think it's great that I'm back here at the Strand amongst books when you kind of started my collection back then.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, I've got such a collection of catalogs. I started when I was 21. It's just such a treat. I love art books. I think this gentleman.
I was really fascinated by how you said you like to mix the high and the low aspects of art. And I wanted to know, like, since the 80s, where commercials were low art, well, they still are, but the paradigm has shifted considerably since then. What are you interested in, any of the new technological aspects of, like, low art and pursuing anything in that regard, or?
Well, what's low art?
That's kind of my
comic
question,
books?
Too. What do you
think?
Yeah,
I don't know. You know, I think that there's many ways to make art as there are people making art. And I always look for the best artist in that practice. And I don't privilege one art form. I really don't over another. Academia says minimalism is rules, but not necessarily. You know, I think they're all pretty equal. Really important. All the practices are important. I love everything. Well, this young man's asked first, and then there's a young lady back there.
Hi, it's a two-part question. So you said in your recent work it's about Photoshop. You're still shooting analog.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering why you haven't just gone full digital. What still attracts you to film?
Well, you know, I'm so into surfaces because I'm a painter mostly. And I just don't get the depth, you know. You never get that, you just don't get that light going through a condenser. And I lose too much detail. I would do it in a second, but I've rented the, lots of people are trying to get me to go, but I still, as a painter, I'm not ready. You know I can fake it with digital and I can get close. But why not shoot film and scan it?
My second part of the question is, when you get to the final Photoshop file with all the layers, how do you get from there to the final painting?
Well, even the final painting changes from the Photoshop layers. It's just that there's this act of discovery that you can't, it's one of those experiential things, and there's no way to predict. Nothing ever, and no, I don't know any artist who says that. I can't imagine an artist who says that this is a, their ideas don't constantly percolate and change before the final product. And I think if you're smart, you go with that gut thing to change things. Instead of saying, oh, I'm not going to change it, I'll do the next one. You know that. I know there's a lot of artists in here, so I just wanted to say that go with your gut all the time. There was a young lady.
I really loved Green Pink Caviar, and I actually stood and watched it on loop for a while in the Met this past week. But
the
MoMA. What did you like about working in video, and are you planning on doing it again?
Yes, I'm about to shoot another video. I love it. I love high definition video. I love the way it looks. But I like anything that it's like a moving painting in some ways. And it wouldn't work for me unless I had an idea, and I like this idea that I'm going to do. So it's just one of those natural, it seems like I can do video photography and painting. It makes sense to me. One doesn't steal from the others. I think that's it. No, one more. Sure.
Here she comes.
Right. Your initial paintings, you mentioned screen print, I believe. Is that a technique? Or
no, it was fake mechanization. It wasn't screened. I actually painted each one of those dots.
Okay.
I just had the projector on.
Okay.
When I was painting. The food porn was all dots.
That was neat.
And
So my question is, and maybe it's kind of obvious, but I'm just curious, you haven't talked maybe about your influences. I know a lot of your imagery really references fashion and kind of that culture of products and beautification and all these things, but I'm curious what it does. I know your campaign or your work with Mac or Madonna, it does filter into popular culture. and I'm just curious how much you look at that world and what your relationship is and how you situate yourself. And
well, I think interesting art to me is art that's about the times we live in, and I think art that's interesting shines a light on these times, and I'm more interested in these multiple layers of multiple reads of the cultural products that we have around us, and I feel like, you know, that we get too much. It's too easy to criticize glamorous imagery. And it's, you know, we all know the drawbacks of seeing models that are too skinny, or, you know, airbrushed robotic human beings. That's just too easy, because, like, at the same time, these images are giving enormous pleasure to people, but they always are going to, they always know that they're never going to look like that. Even the models don't look like that. Nobody looks like that anymore. Nowadays, nobody looks like this. And it's, but it's still giving you enormous amounts of pleasure to see these images when you go through these magazines. And I like the idea of trying to make a picture of what that feels like to look. So I don't want to tell you what to think. I want you to come to your own conclusions. It's like most things, you know, in my world, it's all the gray areas, and two opposing ideas can be held in the same moment. And that's, you know, complicated. I think that life is so complicated that I like to try and mimic that in my art or somebody else.
What did your mom think of the photos that you took?
Oh, she's dead long ago. When you're a drug addict, you don't live very long. Well, some people do. William Burroughs.
What gives you angst, both while you're painting and also in the sort of global?
Well, I don't never want a painting. That gives me enormous pleasure. Painting is therapeutic. What gives me angst? Politics. Cruelty. Being right up here, right now. The usual suspects.
Hi, is it comfortable for you to work with fashion people or commercial art?
No, but most of the time they don't want to work with me. It's more, you know, I've only done two things in my life. It's like, the commercial world doesn't really hire me, but when they do, they're open. I mean, I'm going to piggyback anything I can on, because frankly, it's the fashion glamour world is so all encompassing. I don't know the latest fashions. I don't know the latest makeup artists. I don't want to pay for catering. I don't want to pay for film. You know, this is expensive to do a photo shoot. If I can piggyback some art on it, I'm going to take advantage of those resources. But very few people hire me. Too bad, huh? There's somebody here.
I've been asked to stand up. Continuing on your comments about your work and its connection to our culture, I wanted to ask you about how much further you think you can go with what you're looking at with women, because one of the things that I'm so interested in with your work is how far you're going with what you're looking at with women, with makeup, with shoes, with clothes, with sweat, with eyes, with glitter, with everything that we do to ourselves. And I'm wondering, what's that next step for you?
I don't think it's finite, you know, because fashion's constantly changing. And I paint guys too, by the way. No one notices that.
No, I know.
Yeah, but the world just keeps producing imagery, and that's just gonna be for me to make sense of in my way. as a, it's a real natural thing. There's, it would be like, you know, when does creativity stop? Because being in that, creating these images is a, it's an art form. You know, I'm not mine, but the ones I'm riffing off of. That's not going to stop.
So you collaborated with Wangeshi and Pam. Any other dream?
Madonna.
And Madonna. Any others you'd like to collaborate with?
Yes. Yeah, I'd like to work with Lady Gaga. Well, thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it.
You just listened to a BOM podcast. An artist talk by Marilyn Minter, followed by a Q&A with publisher Gregory Miller, co-sponsored by DAP, Distributed Art Publishers, and The Strand Bookstore. It was recorded live at The Strand in New York City on May 25, 2010, on the occasion of the release of her expanded monograph, published by Gregory R. Miller & Company. And don't miss other BOM podcasts at bombsite.com.